There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast
on the left.
Live from your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
Sweet the leg.
God, I'm so excited. I love making noises.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to be so many noises. I mean, this could be a lot of fun noises.
I think
Hadouken.
Yeah. What is, like, for me, like, a good karate noise is a quick.
Yeah. Depending. I mean, depending on where you are, because some might like the.
Showy for me.
I like the high pitched ones. I like the ones that hit your ear like a fucking bullet.
Well, you just watched that Bruce Lee movie.
Yeah, I watched Game of Death, the last quote unquote Bruce Lee movie that they just used all of the footage that he filmed right before he died, and then replaced all the rest of the footage with a stand-in, a guy who kind of looks like Bruce Lee wearing really dark glasses.
It's a game of death.
Sometimes you win, and when you win,
you die.
It was a depressing movie. Welcome to the last podcast on the left, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Marcus Parks. I'm here with Henry Zebrowski, the man who I think. Do you have the discipline?
Huh.
Do you have the knowledge?
Yeah. Hoi, ha. Hoi. Yes. I have watched at least 4 Kurosawa films in the last month. So, honestly, I know a lot of people have pushed back on me by
there's
some.
There's no karate in those movies.
No, but there's swordsmanship.
None whatsoever.
There's swordsmanship.
Sure.
And also.
But there are also swordsmanship in, like, Game of Thrones.
No, there's the core man-on-man respectful battle. One-on-one. Right? Code of the Samurai.
But the samurai is no kung fu, right?
Sit! Quit! Sit! No!
No.
You're right. It's got nothing to do with kung fu. But sit! What's nice is that for a long time, because obviously some people have said that I did some sort of... I played many characters over the years.
Sure. Yeah. I say talent.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I feel that now, more than I've ever been, I'm almost Asian.
Sure.
I feel very Asian right now.
Why?
Because of Kurosawa. And he's given me permission.
No, okay. He hasn't.
Well, and then I watched Evangelion.
He's been dead for a very long time.
I watched Evangelion and I feel like a little Japanese boy.
Sure.
Yeah. You want to feel Asian? Watch Kundun.
Just run away. Oh, yeah. Watch The Last Samurai. I'm as Asian as Tom Cruise.
And we have the man who does not confuse consuming culture with being a part of it. That's Ed Larson.
Who's running it? I know nothing.
And the reason why Henry is so...
I'm channeling my eat instead of my chi.
Ooh. More of like your chew.
And the reason why Henry is going so hard on appropriation today is that we are starting a series, a nice quick 2-part series on a man who, I mean, appropriated Asian culture just in... such a beautiful way, and in such an incredibly violent way, it's Count Dante, the deadliest man alive.
I have never seen another show necessarily cover this material. The first time I read this, as we were going through all the research, I laughed, and I laughed, and I laughed.
Yeah.
This man is one of the funniest, to me, like, personas we've ever even covered on this show.
If you called him funny to his face, he would fucking try to rip your tits off.
Two-finger strike!
He would rip your tits off. Yeah. He would beat you half to death for looking at him sideways. That was sort of his hallmark.
Yeah. Unless I was helping bring the neighborhood together.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of that. You know, at the same time, man. This man, he was definitely trying to integrate the martial arts.
Trying to, yeah. Well, in April of 1970, a martial arts instructor in Chicago calling himself Count Juan Rafael Dante stormed the dojo of a rival school with 6 of his students. And by the end of the melee, one man was dead from a gaping neck wound.
I thought Count Dante was the guy we interviewed who sucked on ladies' backs and called himself a vampire.
Father Sebastian. This is his nephew.
But while this incident was a one-off, it still came to be known as the Dojo War.
There doesn't need to be more than one battle for there to be a war.
Sometimes. You just need one big one.
As far as who Count Dante was, most people knew him from the ads he placed in various Marvel and DC comic books throughout the late 1960s. In these ads, Count Dante billed himself as the deadliest man alive, whose fighting secrets could be yours only if you join his Black Dragon Fighting Society. Here's an example of Dante's advertising pattern.
Yes, this is the deadliest and most terrifying fighting art known to man, and without equal. Its maiming, mutilating, disfiguring, paralyzing, and crippling techniques are known by only a few people in the world. Instructing you step by step through each move in this manual is none other than Count Dante, the deadliest man who ever lived, the crown prince of death.
You can't advertise, I'm going to teach you how to mutilate and paralyze people.
He did, though.
He did. Dozens upon dozens of times across both major comic book publishers. Like, Count Dante was, I mean, he was a mainstay in late 1960s comic books.
What is the legality of that?
Not, I mean, dubious.
There's a lot of people that just by looking at me assume I can't paralyze you. I definitely can. Get closer. It's not false advertising.
In a chair, strike!
I mean, really, all you have to do is at the end just print for entertainment purposes only at some point, yeah. And it removes all culpability. Well, in reality, Count Juan Rafael Dante was born John Keehan, the half-Irish son of a wealthy gynecologist from Chicago. Count Dante...
Don't call him a pussy.
No, I'm just elbow deep in it.
But what one does not realize is that the vagina is actually the strongest muscle on the body.
Vagina strength!
Here, open my Pepsi.
Count Dante had used his family's wealth to travel to various Asian countries dozens of times throughout the 1960s, where he learned martial arts techniques from dozens of teachers teaching dozens of disciplines. Now, it is tempting to call Count Dante an outright fraud, but by all accounts, the man did actually know what he was doing from, at the very least, a technical standpoint when it came to martial arts.
But I loved that showed Eddie the video of one of his instructional sessions.
And I have to say that it really refutes everything you just said.
It's so funny.
Well, because I believe he does know what he's doing. But let's just say he cuts to the chase. And instead of doing all the normal kind of we're going back and forth, he just smashes your head on the ground.
Yes. Yeah, and that's what you and that's the difference is that when you're watching him, you're expecting to see Bruce Lee. You're expecting to see somebody who looks beautiful doing it. Yeah. It looks very graceful and it looks like there's a lot of discipline behind
it. He looks like a grocery store butcher.
Yeah. Remember the game Final Fight?
Yeah.
You know, where you just go through the street. It was kind of like Streets of Rage. That's what his fighting style looks like to me.
Yeah, yeah. He looks like the big guy with the overalls, who is also the mayor, by the way.
Oh! Yeah.
Well, Count Dante could watch and almost immediately copy almost any fighting technique. And people who trained with him said that Count Dante was powerful enough to break a man's arm by slapping him on the shoulder. He's a big dude. He was 6 foot, went about between 180 and 200. But while Count Dante was a talented martial artist, he was also, to put it lightly, eccentric, as is any Irishman from Chicago who legally changes his name to Count Juan Rafael Dante.
One time I went on vacation and I got a tan and it stuck.
So who said that he could break someone's arm by slapping their shoulder?
One of his students. There was a lot... All the people that were spoken to about Count Dante, the guys who studied under him or fought against him, they're like, no, he could fight. He was very dangerous. Yeah. He was a highly, highly dangerous man.
He was just stupid. Yeah, I don't know. But he's not... I don't believe that. I think that everyone... to me, it's like a cult.
Sure.
And they're all following the cult. They're like, he could break someone's arm.
You see, he does end up killing somebody.
Well, actually, he doesn't.
Well, he helps.
It's his fault the person dies. Yes.
Well, let's not give it away just yet. But partly, Dante was eccentric because being eccentric was good bait for the ruffians of 1960 Chicago. Dante was an innately violent person, so he dressed flamboyantly specifically to attract trouble.
Like Henry.
Yeah. And the jeers and insults thrown his way gave him a reliable excuse to beat men half to death in the middle of the street on a regular basis. That is true.
Let me tell you something I know about you. My father stuck a tool in your mother's pussy. What are you going to do about it?
What are you going to do about it?
I mean, he would just walk around dressed like an idiot and wait for someone to go, hey, nice shirt. And then his eyes would bulge out of his head, and he'd be on the other person in a second, and he could beat damn near anyone half to death.
But it's so hard for me to believe that's true.
It's because it's the element of surprise, Eddie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, people who also didn't like him would say the same thing.
Yep.
It wasn't just guys who followed him. It was guys who also were like, no, he was fucking awful, but yeah, he could fight.
Okay.
But I mean, I don't know how technically skilled he was at all times, as far as like looking like it. It's just he was able to take those moves and apply them in such a way and apply them in like the most violent way possible and the most effective way possible. But on the other hand, Count Dante was also a champion of racial integration throughout the 1960s civil rights era, and he partly dedicated his dojos to teaching justice and community, even if every other lesson he gave was incredibly violent. His reputation for ending a street fight in seconds naturally attracted a lot of kids who wanted to know how to do the same. And while teaching defensive and allegedly deadly martial arts to young men is a dubious proposition, Count Dante's classes were integrated at a time when most things in America weren't. But before we hold up Dante as a pillar of the community, he was also a fucking criminal.
Oh, yeah. He's complex.
Even setting aside his brief career as a coke smuggler in the early 1970s, Dante also participated in, or even possibly masterminded, the Pearlator vault heist of 1974 with a mobster named Luigi DeFonso.
He's fake. That's a cartoon character.
No, Luigi DeFonso was a real guy. They called him the Sicilian Gatsby.
Hey, yes, enjoy my party. Hope you do enjoy. Don't worry, there's plenty of marinara for everyone.
just giving, oh, have you had this figure ghoul?
Ah, very good. Yes, very good.
The take from this heist was $4.3 million. It was one of the largest heists in American history. This, however, was just before Count Dante died while projectile vomiting blood from a stomach ulcer at the age of 36.
Live fast. Die fun.
Now, Dante's involvement in this heist is questionable because, as we'll see over the course of this series, the Count was a pathological liar, a master of his own mythology. But at the same time, Dante did lead a somewhat incredible life. But that life was usually made incredible by Count Dante's continual need to create the conditions for chaos and mayhem in service of building said mythology.
This seems to be a lovely antique store you have. Would be a shame if there was antiques or strike!
As far as sources, we use The Deadliest Man Alive, Count Dante, The Mob, and the War for American Martial Arts by Benji Feldheim, and a piece from WBEZ Chicago called How the Deadliest Man Alive Stoked Chicago's Infamous Dojo Wars. That one's by Joe DeCult. And both of them tell a story that is very stupid, but also, at the same time, fucking incredible. Like, it's such an American tale. Yeah. Just a guy saying, I want that, I'm going to do that, and I can make it mine.
Yeah, and I'm going to lie at all costs to get it.
Yeah. And so, let's tell the story of Count Juan Rafael Dante, a.k.a. Jan Timothy Keehan. But for the sake of clarity, we will be referring to our main character as Count Dante throughout this series.
He's really Count Dante.
He is. Well, he did legally change it to Count Dante.
Hey, I'm sure Prince's real name isn't Prince. We call him that.
Yeah, that is true. Well, Count Dante was born on February 2nd, 1939, to a couple named Dorothy and Jack Keehan. While Jack was Irish, Dorothy was Spanish by birth. And allegedly, Dorothy and Jack fled the fascists in Spain just before the Spanish Civil War began in 1936. This is where the Juan Rafael in Count Juan Rafael Dante came from.
That
came from his Spanish heritage.
Oh, we're quite Spanish in Chicago.
Now, the Keehans settled in the Beverly neighborhood, the southwest side of Chicago, after allegedly fleeing the fascists. Here, Jack Keehan earned a good good living working both as a popular OBGYN and the director of a local state bank. Jackie and son, the future Count Dante, therefore grew up wealthy, and he was never embarrassed about using his parents' money to buy and do whatever he wanted, whenever he wanted. That's important to note. That without that wealth, Count Dante would have never become a Count Dante.
Oh, he's like Taylor Swift.
Sure.
Yeah, same reach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same reach, same cultural impact.
You know, he just really got out there, you know.
They called him the Dantes.
Well, yes, the Dantes.
Now, when Count Dante was in the third grade, and I don't know why, but I love that sense, when Count Dante was in the third grade.
Oh,
he claimed that he was hanging around his house when a couple of young street toughs attacked him.
How'd you get in my living room?
His neighbor, a kid named Tommy Gregory, jumped in to even up the fight. And after the two kids joined forces and defended themselves, they became instant, lifelong best friends.
Back to back, brother on brother.
Count Dante, however, used this conflict as a motivator. This was allegedly one of only two fights that Dante lost over the course of his entire life. And he vowed that after that day, he would never lose a fight again.
Yeah, the only other fight he lost was against that ulcer.
Yeah. Three fights then.
Yes.
I wonder if the IRS would have been another one.
Well, we didn't really get there yet. Let's just say there's no martial art when it comes to deductibles.
Let's also say that this was a time in America when a man could just run away from his problems.
Yeah.
You could just leave.
I jump into the tree.
There are no taxes in trees. Well, after this dark third grade day, the most important thing in the Count's mind to cultivate was the ability to physically defend himself. And as it went, he was able to devote his life to this cause because of the way his bizarre mind worked. See, Count Dante was somewhat of an idiot savant. He was one of those guys who can learn and remember almost anything, but because he's also kind of stupid, he used that knowledge to do the dumbest shit possible at every opportunity. For example, at a young age, Dante became obsessed with people who faked their own death. So he learned techniques to control his own breathing so he could appear dead.
I'd like you to see if you could guess if I'm alive or not. I'm going to stop breathing until I get a huge ulcer.
Mother, tell me, am I dead or am I alive? I am dead.
I'm dead, mummy.
Likewise, when it was discovered that the Count had a fantastic natural singing voice, he began training as an opera singer, supposedly while still a prepubescent child.
I could have been a castrati, but I loved my girlfriends too much.
But owing to Dante's experience with his local bullies, the things he devoted himself to the most were the physical arts, like weightlifting, wrestling, boxing, and of course, any and all martial arts available. As his best friend Tommy Gregory put it, Count Dante wasn't happy until he'd completely conquered a new hobby. Everything had to be louder, faster, stronger, and more intense. So for the Count, the only gear he had was full out.
You should hear me on the CB radio.
What's your handle?
Count Dante. Man, I'll just say no. It's easy to find.
Now, Count Dante entered puberty in the mid-1950s, and since martial arts was not the most popular thing in Chicago just yet when it came to self-defense, Dante learned boxing at a place called Johnny Coulon's Boxing Gym.
Now, the thing is to remember that karate, all right? You're going over there. The first thing you do, you get some, obviously, you're going to want to bow a lot, to bow, to do the bow. Mm-hmm. But the thing I remember is, you punch him with your feet. You dig in a dough. So, I was supposed to suck a cigarette.
What if I want to punch with my hands?
But that makes you, I mean, you're not Japanese enough.
Now, this boxing gym was racially integrated in the mid-50s, when segregation was still very much the law of the land across most of America. So Count Dante grew up with people who emphasized diversity, people who continually talked about the nonsensical nature of racism and segregation. As far as who taught Count Dante how to box, it was seemingly Johnny Coulon himself. Coulon was born in 1889, and he'd boxed as the world bantamweight champion between 1910 and 1914, when boxing matches would go on for dozens of rounds.
Oh, yeah.
Kulan put boxing on hold to fight in World War One.
I fought a whole country. I went out there, and the first thing I did was I took the Kaiser. Oh, I put him in the bowl.
But Kulan returned to Chicago to open his gym in 1923. And over the decades, Kulan trained the best. Jack Dempsey, Joe Louis, Sugar Ray Robinson, Muhammad Ali, even Ernest Hemingway came to Kulan's gym for training.
Wow.
By the time Count Dante began training with Kulan, Kulan was a Chicago legend who could still jump out of the ring over the top rope despite the fact that he was pushing 80 years old. They said he'd land on his feet without, like, softly, like a cat. Yeah,
like a cat. Honestly, I could see that. That's kind of fun. Like, it just, God, he must be. Remember Martin Short from Arrested Development?
Sure.
Like, that's all I really can think of.
Dragon!
Yeah. He just jumps over the thing.
I feel like so many of these guys just claim that they train these people. Because how many people claim that they trained Muhammad Ali?
Well, Muhammad Ali was Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, and so it made sense that he would train Muhammad Ali. But he had pictures on the wall. Like, Johnny Cool. Like, even though Count Dante is in the middle of this as kind of a fabulist, the people that he trained with and the people that he actually met and knew were some of the foremost fighting experts of the mid-20th century.
Yeah, they all can't be Mike Tyson.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
And they also all don't have to be idiots.
Yeah.
Now, from what it seems like, Count Dante began building his fanciful self-image at a young age. While the Juan Rafael and his alias came from his mother's Spanish heritage, the Dante seems to have come from his high school years. Dante's alma mater, Mount Carmel High, was located at 6410 South Dante Avenue.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the, like, you know, the famous poem. Like the famous ancient poet, Dante.
No, it's mm-mm. That's the street where my high school was at.
That's it, yeah. Like, very good. Very, very good. Hidden wisdom.
The Dante, however, could have been a tribute to the city that the Count obviously loved. He was a lifelong Chicagoan. Dante and his best friend Tommy would wander the neighborhoods of Chicago, smoking cigars while riding the L to jazz clubs, where Dante and Tommy would be the only white kids. I just can imagine these two teenage shitheads on the L chomping on huge cigars.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, you know, it's kind of fun, though. They're going to jazz clubs.
Yeah, yeah. They said they once saw Fats Domino play, and they said it was incredible.
I mean, that'd be incredible.
Yeah.
I would love to see Fats Domino play back then. Oh, my God.
These guys are doing great so far.
So far, yeah.
Yeah, if you believe any of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Tommy Gregory is seen as a reliable source.
Okay.
Like, he was Count Dante's best friend, but as we'll see, like, he kind of comes in and out of Dante's life. And the writer of the book, at the very least, like, trusted him, like, checked enough on Tommy Gregory's claims. You're like, ah, yeah, he's probably telling the truth most of the time. Because, like I said, like, Count Dante is a liar, but he also lived a weird fucking life.
And it was very well documented. Like, he lived his life in public, too. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah.
Man, that video you sent me of him, like, pretending to rip out that guy's eyes, like, it was, like, hilarious.
Yeah. Because
it was just, like, him going at the guy's eyes, and the guy going, oh, oh! And then they do it again, like, 30 times in a row.
But the other time when he's like, but then there's the other one where he locks the guy's head in with his legs and just his kidney punching him, and he's punching him in the kidneys and punching him in the kidneys. And I was like, that's his student.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we're going to get into how much Count Dante beat the shit out of his own students and how much his students beat the shit out of each other.
Yeah.
But it was during his high school years of mischief that Dante would, according to him, garner his second and last fighting loss of his entire life. And that loss came, of course, because the other guy fought dirty. See, in high school, Count Dante got into a fight with, quote, a couple of Sicilians who broke into his father's boathouse.
Oh, you know, because of that. You know how much money's in a houseboat.
Yeah. No,
that's the first thing in my house.
Boathouse.
Oh,
the boathouse. Like, the boat probably going to steal, like, some, you know, rigging or a motor.
It's a house for boats. It's not a stupid person calling
for a house. That's my boathouse. That's my boathouse.
Well, Dante took off his shirt when he discovered the burglary and got into a boxing post.
Come on here. Are you ready for the pugilistic arts?
Burglars just immediately kicked Dante in the balls.
What the fuck? That's not the fucking manual. Not allowed.
Both burglars ran away while the count was writhing on the ground, clutching his groin in pain.
A good karate man could have blocked it.
Yeah, he could have.
Well, he wasn't there yet.
No, yeah. He was not there yet.
He's only working on boxing.
That's it.
There's no kicking in boxing.
This is like 1957. So he doesn't even know that feet exist.
He's only on this level. He's on like, this is like a type of boxing too, where two men show up, they get ready to punch each other, they go back and forth. It's like, hip, 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 hip. And it's like, as soon as he got kicked in the balls, honestly, I think in his own mind, he was like, that's incredible. What an amazing move.
Live from your grave.
Now, when Count Dante graduated high school in 1958, he enlisted in the Marine Corps Reserve. And it seems like this is the point when Dante really started constructing his own myth. Dante claimed that in the 1 year he was in the Marine Reserves, he was stationed in Japan, Vietnam, and Korea.
Everywhere there's rice.
He supposedly discovered martial arts for real while in those countries. He claimed that he studied at least 6 different martial arts under 20 different instructors.
They couldn't handle me. I killed each one with my bare hands.
But he never stayed with one school for long because he said that staying with one school hindered his learning.
Do not limit me. I am endless.
Or he just got kicked out all the time.
Could be.
Because they couldn't handle my intensity.
Hey. John, get out of here. Why don't you just leave? Please leave.
I would normally take my stand here, and I would show you that my kung fu is stronger than yours. But I will leave because my boss is here.
Well, during his travels in the Orient, Count Dante also claimed, quite mysteriously, never gave any other details, that he entered a death match in Thailand and actually killed a man. And this murder, he says, allowed him to enter a fighting tournament in Bangkok, where he miraculously fought his way through to win the heavyweight championship title.
One of the craziest things I ever saw was that man who came out and turned into complete electricity. There was another Asian man who shot electricity. And then there was that Indian man with the super long arms. But I tied them all together. And I made them zap each other. Let's go, Dante! Who's that? Who's that?
This, of course, almost certainly did not happen.
What?
Yeah. While plenty of guys have died fighting in matches in Thailand because of how brutal their martial arts can be.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I don't even know, like, is it pronounced like Muay Thai?
Muay Thai.
Yeah. No, it's fucking brutal. Dudes died all the time. But matches in which guys start knowing that one of them is going to be beaten to death, they don't actually exist outside of kung fu movies.
No, I don't think so.
No, like the fucking blood sport, you know, putting the, you know, in the glass and nails and all that. That doesn't happen.
I feel like if you killed somebody, they would disqualify you.
Yeah,
they'd be like
frowned upon.
The police. Yeah.
Outside of fucking Game of Death, Enter the Dragon. Outside of Enter the Dragon, it's not. It's not. It doesn't happen.
Wait a second. Aren't we doing this very thing on the White House lawn for the 250th birthday party?
Yeah. It's someone might die.
Honestly, that would be kind of a blast.
It really would be.
They would love it. Unfortunately,
yeah. I'd like it.
Now, the Thai death matches aren't the only fishy component of Count Dante's time in the military. See, Dante was always a little vague about his time in the armed forces, and author Benji Feldheim, through a FOIA request, discovered why.
Yes, it's because they're ancient Asian secrets.
Well, while one record has Dante being honorably discharged from the Marine Corps Reserve after just a year of service,
most honorably. Yeah.
Another record shows him being dishonorably discharged.
Most dishonorably.
But he got dishonorably discharged from the Army a year after he was honorably discharged from the Marine Corps Reserve. Apparently, Dante joined the Army after the Reserves. But according to his military disciplinary record, Count Dante was busted by the MPs for weed possession and going AWOL for the month of February, during the winter of 1960.
That's because it's Black History Month. Black History Month, and I was out helping my dojo integrate.
Additionally, Count Dante had also crashed a couple of cars, destroyed property, shot at his friend's car.
Rumors and hearsay.
And somehow injured himself by bashing his own head with the butt of a pistol.
The gun insulted me.
He's just trying to prove that he can break the gun with his head.
Yeah. Look in here. Hey, look. Look what I'm doing. Hey, look at me. Hey, mom.
I remember one time at a party in high school, there was this tough guy who said he could break a bottle over his own own head. Ooh. And then we're like, don't do it. He's like, I can do it. We're like, don't do it. And then he just started doing it, but then he couldn't do it. So yeah. he just like kept like hitting him. Clunk, dunk, 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 dunk over and over again.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, everybody went to a party where there was a guy who tried that at least once.
I remember when our buddy Tim thought he could fight the parking lot. Then he just punched the ground till he broke his hand.
Yeah, good old times.
Yeah, there's plenty of guys who also think they can, you know, beat the sidewalk.
I once punched a Mercedes Benz in its mouth.
According to Count Dante's best friend, Tommy, Dante, he just wasn't vibing with the army. So he was doing anything and everything to get a discharge, dishonorable or not. But considering Count Dante's behavior throughout his entire adult life, his blow up in the army could have merely been the first of many periods in which the Count lost all control and caused a lot of mayhem. He's very good at mayhem.
Well, could you see him just being like, God damn, out here in the jungles, one of the most intense fears I've ever experienced. And they're like, we're in southern Florida. You know what I mean? Like, we're training in North Carolina.
Yeah, it's 1960. Like, there's no conflicts going on at that point.
We're not fighting anybody. Yeah,
it's
right
like
now.
There's a lot of like tension from the Cold War, but yeah, you know, there's no Korea and Vietnam hadn't started yet. So, bleh.
I fight my corrupt whiteness.
I don't want to jump ahead too much, but I am legitimately curious. Did he ever like have a wife or anything like that, or like a girlfriend?
Yeah, he had a couple of girlfriends. We'll get in part two. We shall explore the myth of the Dragon Lady.
Her vagina was scaled.
But since Count Dante came from a wealthy family, he didn't have to worry about money in his 20s. Like a lot of wealthy weirdos before him, Count Dante was able to dedicate himself to whatever he pleased after he was dishonorably discharged. So Dante applied himself to the accumulation of martial arts techniques.
Like fucking Batman.
Yeah, kind of, sort of like Batman. Yeah,
dude.
Yeah, it's like Batman, but if Batman's parents were alive and Batman just wanted attention.
You honestly, what a great way to be Batman, though.
Yeah, it is.
Pretty sure that's the Joker.
I'm caught, man.
But it is important to note that Dante was paying little attention to any of the philosophy that accompanied all of these martial arts techniques that he was accumulating. See, Dante was, as I said, somewhat of an idiot savant. He could quickly learn and copy almost anything he saw. It was almost like the I know kung fu scene from The Matrix. But without the discipline that usually accompanies the accumulation of these techniques, Count Dante was like the proverbial chimp with a machine gun. In other words, Dante was in possession of powerful techniques, but didn't have the wherewithal to know how dangerous those techniques could truly be, especially when he quickly started teaching these techniques to other people simply to gain attention.
I love that, like, the whole purpose of martial arts is the philosophy.
In the discipline.
It's all about self-transformation. It's all about being, you know, like, it's about your chi. It's about all of these, like, truly, like, interesting things. Yes, self-defense, but
it's like, about peace.
It's about keeping peace by being able to, if you need to, enforce peace.
Yeah.
You know, and then this guy, it's just so funny. It's just been like, fuck peace. Peace is gay. I think his first thought is being like, I want to punch through an old man's head. And it's like, you know what, though? That's a new American brand of karate.
Hey, in so many ways, Count Dante really is like kind of the beginning of this mixed martial arts bullshit that we see now, where the whole point is to just beat a man as badly as you can, as quickly as you can.
I miss the old...
It's the coarseness of the coarsening of America.
Sure. I miss the old UFC fighting when it really... You remember when the OG days and it
shoot
was like...
Shoot fighting.
But it was like... it was like specifically one style of fighting versus another style of fighting.
Yeah.
Like,
that's
it was specifically like a boxer with me. That was the old days. Now everybody's mixed martial arts, but that was like not a thing originally. I miss that. I miss when it was being like, Kenjeet Kundo beat the Aikido master. Like, I love that shit.
Well, that was a holdover from the old days of martial arts tournaments.
Yeah.
Is that usually that's what they would do, is they would have, you know, like your karate guy against the karate guy and so on and so forth, and they would stick to those disciplines. But Count Dante came in just like, let's just put them all together and use them to beat someone into a pulp as fast as possible.
Sometimes you just gotta grab a guy by the testicles and yank on him a bunch while you're sticking your finger up his nostril. It does work.
Now, Count Dante's ignorance of danger was on full display whenever he would flippantly talk about how many people he had allegedly killed in his youth. He later said in an interview with Black Belt Magazine, which Black Belt Magazine plays a big role in this story, he said that he had supposedly, and this is a big supposedly, killed at least 25 men during his time in the armed forces.
When we're at no wars at all.
Listen, Jimmy, you might think I hadn't killed 25 people, but you didn't see me at my open mic.
But Dante, he was always vague as to how, where, and why he killed those men. He always left it up to the other person to decide if Dante had killed those 25 men for the army or in various Thai death matches.
I once left a box of dynamite in the sun, and it killed an entire hospital.
By the way, Count Dante was fond of waxing philosophical about killing, which implies that he probably never actually killed anyone. He was quoted as saying,
"There is always a surge in not being killed yourself and being a survivor. But I do not get any type of sexual, spiritual, physical, or psychological thrill out of killing somebody. I believe in the human spirit and the individual soul."
But according to Count Dante, some of those kills were earned in Cuba, where Dante claimed he had fought as a guerrilla warrior in the Cuban Revolution alongside Fidel Castro's brother Raul.
Ay, 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 Raul and I. Such buenos amigos.
So he's a communist.
No, I fight in the Maniquas.
He was vague as to why he decided to fight with, or why he said he decided to fight with the guerrilla fighters in the Cuban Revolution.
We were betrayed by the Yankees. Yeah. We were betrayed by them. We were betrayed by the Rough Riders. And that's why I went out into Las Maniquas, chased the Yankees out into the jungles. And I received the many gracious besitos of the Mama Chulas. Yum, yum, Mama Chulas. Yum, yum, give me some. Ah, Cuba, Cuba, Cuba. Land of the Maduro.
It sounds like utter bullshit.
Yes.
But his best friend Tommy does remember Dante making trips to Cuba during the late 1950s. Because even though the revolution was like 1959, but he was, you know, in and out.
Guess what they were getting? Cigars.
Well, this is before the embargo. You can buy Cuban cigars in Chicago. You don't got to go all the way to Cuba for those.
I actually made this is an honest mistake. I thought that the cigars were illegal.
He probably just took a nap for a week and then told everyone he was in Cuba.
It's called a napacito. And I was quite bueno at napacito.
But Dante continued bouncing around the world with his parents' money to study under a series of senseis, where he learned even more complex techniques.
This is awesome.
Yeah, and the reason why Dante never stayed with one sensei for long was because Dante actually felt that most martial arts instructors, they weren't very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, he claimed to have the ability to pick up on new techniques much faster on his own. All he had to do was watch, and he would learn.
Absolutely. I had the same thing with improv teachers. They always just ended up weeping. They almost ended up weeping and quitting the industry when I was done with them because my techniques were far too masterful.
I don't know what to do. He won't shut up.
Yeah. I'm following the fear, but the fear is that he's going to fucking talk forever.
Yes, and.
Well, Dante was gallivanting around Asia. His best friend, Tommy Gregory, moved on with his life. He took a construction job in Phoenix.
I guess I'll never see old Dante again, you know?
Took that job in Phoenix in 1960. But one day, Tommy got a call from Count Dante, who asked, "Tommy, are there any karate schools in Phoenix?"
Huh.
Tommy said, "Yeah, there's one." So Dante packed his bags and headed for Arizona. Surprisingly, the guy who ran the one karate school in Phoenix, this is sort of a serendipitous moment, that was Robert Trias, who is actually credited as the man who brought karate to America. Trias opened America's first karate school in 1946 and soon after published the first American book about karate. It was very dramatically titled, "The Hand is My Sword, A Karate Handbook."
That's fucking awesome, dude. And for some reason, I just, when you say brought karate to America, I just see a box and just going like,
it's just moving around.
What is there, a bunch of cats in
here? Like, no, it's the secret art of karate.
But these are definitely guys who are going to get pissed off at you for saying karate.
If
you
don't say
karate.
Karate.
No, Karates. I love Karates.
Is that right? Is that right? Is it Karates?
Honestly, just from your pronunciation of the word, you have the correct IQ to be my student.
That's wonderful.
Here's the first. Let me show you the first move I learned accidentally.
Okay.
Single ball kick. My eyes.
Countdown Day was actually very fond of going for the eyes. He claimed to have taken the eyes of many men. I have taken eyes. Do not fuddle with me.
Do not even think. Don't even raise that eyebrow. Give me a room to steal your eye.
Now, Robert Trios was a legit dude. He'd been a boxer in the Navy during World War II. And while he was stationed in the Solomon Islands on the Pacific Front, he became friends with a Chinese missionary who knew karate. This missionary would continually ask Trios to train with him, but Trios kept declining because the missionary was a far smaller man, and Trios was convinced that he would hurt him. But finally, Trios agreed to spar, and after calling all his friends over to watch, Trios got the absolute living shit kicked out of him by the Chinese karate missionary.
I like karate now!
And so Robert Trios spent the rest of his time on the Solomon Islands training to learn karate himself, and when he returned to the United States in the mid-1940s, he brought karate with him.
Can I put this karate in the above holder here? Can I put this up in the above?
Who's got? Anything you need, sir.
Can you hang out my karate in the closet?
Sir, before we check your bag, are you carrying any karate in here?
No, actually, no, not at all. This isn't karate.
Sir, I'm sorry, we can't allow karate in the cargo hold.
Oh, well, let's see what my karate has to say about it.
No, for all of Count Dante's bluster and lies, he was actually pretty fantastic at martial arts, or at the very least, good enough to be able to win pretty much any fight. So when he arrived at Robert Trias' karate dojo, Trias recognized him as a prodigy, and he trained Dante himself. After a month, Dante had his green belt, and Dante thereafter helped Trios expand his school, the U.S. Karate Alliance, or the USKA.
It is finally good to meet a sensei I can respect.
Yeah, name's Bob. Bob Trias.
Yes, sir. I love your accent. What is it from? South Korea?
Well, according to Count Dante's own pamphlets, The World's Deadliest Fighting Secrets, he achieved the black belt rank by the age of 23. It was a world record. Then, over the next few years, Dante claimed to have earned additional black belts in judo, jitte, and aikido.
I got the black belt in Baguazhang.
Baguazhang?
Baguazhang.
What's Baguazhang?
I looked up a bunch of different names of other martial arts, and that's my favorite one.
Baguazhang.
What is that, do you know?
Punching and kicking.
Well, those last two, by the way, were supposedly learned from the creator of Aikido himself, Morihei Ueshiba. Ueshiba had actually trained elite soldiers in deadly martial arts for Japan during wartime, but his soul had become troubled after teaching so many men how to kill with hands, hands that are meant to caress a woman or eat a peach on a spring day under the cherry blossoms of Hokkaido.
I love karate movies.
I do too, yeah. That's one of my favorites.
Would you rather use your hands for a lover or to kill a man?
Sometimes I do wish I could go back to just using my hands to embrace, but unfortunately, they must hold the sword.
So, Ueshiba developed Aikido as a way to teach men in the ways of love and harmony through the regulation of their ki. Ki! That's a vital force believed to be a part of all living entities. It's sort of like the force, to the best of my understanding.
I'd also put it in the same world as like orgone energy or like that style of prana they talk about in yoga.
Sure. Dante, however, paid no attention to all that ki noise.
Ki's just half of what you use on a piano.
And he simply added Aikido techniques to his increasing mixed martial arts style, a style that was dedicated solely to beating the ever-loving and shit out of other human beings.
I first of all will say thank you so much for teaching love, because the one thing I love most is causing a man pain.
Seems like his style was just confusion.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because like what you saw in that video is his teaching style. So when he was teaching it, his idea was like, oh, we're cutting through the pomp and circumstance. We're cutting through all this fucking dumb extra shit. We're cutting through it. We're getting straight to the ass kicking because we're in Chicago in the fucking America.
Yeah, it's Chicago in the 1960s. It's fucking rough out there. I'm going to teach kids how to beat the shit out of people.
Yeah.
Now, by 1962, Count Dante had returned to Chicago to open his own dojo. He was just 23 years old when he did this. Interestingly, though, Count Dante's dojo was located above a legendary nightclub called Mr. Kelly's, which had a policy of pairing a music act with a comedy act nearly every night. So while Count Dante was training Chicago's most violent kids on how to be more violent upstairs, comedians like George Carlin, Richard Pryor, and Joan Rivers, like fucking everybody's fucking Flip Wilson, Jackie Gleason, they're sharing the bill with like Aretha Franklin, Ella Fitzgerald, Herbie Hancock.
Yeah,
the fucking floor below.
It's they're the down height there. Of fucking blues in Chicago.
Yeah, and they're down there just wasting their time singing songs about things in the sky when we're up here doing the real work, beating the fuck out of 14-year-olds. He's this whole time being like, fuck that noise. Come up here, learn how to fight.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that blows my mind is that in 1963, Barbra Streisand made her debut performance at Mr. Kelly's. Like, the debut of Barbra Streisand to the entire fucking world. And all while Barbra Streisand's like, wah, swing, singing downstairs. Count Dante's upstairs beating the shit out of his students. One floor above.
Hello. What's your name? Babs. Nice to meet you. I'm Count Dante. I am the sensei here at this dojo. And I bet you can't punch me in the stomach as hard as you can. Do it, Babs.
You know, my father's a gynecologist.
You can take a look at that thing you got there.
Now, I don't know how they did it. Remember that we had that one studio that was in Greenpoint below the karate studio?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It was, wow.
It was a nightmare.
It was a fucking nightmare. We could never record when the karate studio had classes going.
I just feel like a live blues band is way louder than it.
Yeah,
hopefully.
Yeah, Herbie Hancock downstairs, 1962. That's going to be loud.
God, how lame do you have to be? You skip Herbie Hancock. You walk past Herbie Hancock.
I have to find a teenager.
It's just insane to me now.
Well, eventually, Count Dante's dojo came to be known as the Imperial Academy of Fighting Arts. Now, in addition to technical skill, Count Dante was also a master at branding. And for his dojo's logo, he chose a giant black dragon. Dante also applied black to himself, dyeing his auburn red hair black, most likely to match the black dragon logo, for Dante was himself the black dragon.
How did you know?
I find redheads way more terrifying, personally.
Sure.
Yeah. Like, yeah, a redhead karate master is way scarier than a guy all his hair dyed and shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, likewise, Dante's students would come to be known as the Black Dragon Fighting Society. And while he primarily taught older and working class students, there were certainly teenagers and criminals, mostly drug dealers, in the mix as well. Count Dante, however, did not train his fighters in the traditional way, where philosophy comes first and the whole thing is more, it's like a good way to get exercise and learn discipline. There's a lot of reason why people do martial arts. But the Count did not subscribe to controlled kumite, in which a martial artist pulls back his full strength and abilities while sparring to focus on control and speed. Instead, Count Dante taught his students how to fuck someone up as bad as possible, as fast as possible, by using their full strength and abilities at all times. Ugh. If you were a part of the Black Dragon Fighting Society, you were constantly training for street fights and brawls, which meant that Count Dante's students always associated martial arts with violence and mayhem. Instead of using mats, Count Dante students would grapple on concrete floors.
Makes you strong.
Yeah, they just fucking slam each other like judo throw into the fucking I mean, eventually they did get mats, but in the early days, it's like, we do not need mats. Mats are for weaklings.
Someone's like, some kid broke his neck, and they're like, your family's gonna sue you. Get some mats.
Yes, we will get one extreme action mat.
While part of his classes would consist of karate and judo drills to learn the techniques, most of the time would be spent actually fighting, as opposed to most martial arts schools where the training is no contact. In fact, it was Dante's belief that fighters needed to hurt each other during training. Sometimes Dante would have his students practice self-defense scenarios in which the opponent would be given a knife or even a fucking gun, and the mock assailant would actually try to hurt the other student, often with great success. Like, usually the guy with the fucking doing the karate, not much of a match for the guy with the knife.
Yeah, what I love is your first class, you go in, it's Tuesday, 9 o'clock, you've been working all day, everything's fine, you're like, oh, I can't wait to do this. He's like, all right, now we hand out the guns. Yeah. Just been like, I dare you to shoot me in the head. I dare you to shoot me in the head.
You can see one of his students getting stabbed and them dragging him down the stairs and Aretha Franklin like, just being like, that stupid ass white boy.
I'm sick of this shit. You know what those guys need for each other? Some kind of respect. Wait a goddamn second.
They better think.
Where's a piano?
But to simulate nighttime attacks, Count Dante kept a dim red light bulb in his dojo.
Got to.
And would sometimes recreate attacks where the defender was outnumbered 6-1. And the defender would, of course, get the shit beat out of him in the process. This overall method, which Count Dante called the Dante system, would, of course, be his eventual undoing.
It's not a system.
Yeah, who would think that teaching a bunch of fucking assholes from Chicago, like, here's how you beat the shit out of someone as fast as possible. Who would think that teaching them the world is a violent place and to use violence first always is gonna fucking lead to something bad?
I just love anything called a system.
Oh yeah, the Dante system.
Which has like no book.
Turn off the lights and beat the shit out of each other.
It's a system. Don't worry, it's all planned. Every bit of this is absolutely, it is, oh, this is organized. Ow, I stepped on a dreidel. Yeah, we do this. We do a Hanukkah. We do a whole Hanukkah trial.
As far as fucking someone up fast went, Count Dante's go-to technique for winning a fight was the throat grab. This is, of course, very basic. Dante would grip the throat of his opponent and use the power of his body to twist and pull until the other guy gave up.
The key is you want to get the guy using these two fingers. Buy their Adam's apple.
Yeah, and really like a fucking alligator.
No,
you know?
It's a super effective technique to fucking choke it.
No, yeah, guy, people have been choking people in fights for a long time.
Yeah, but are they making noises while they do it? I grab you. Yeah. But, well, Count Dante's techniques, let's say it didn't always win him friends in the martial arts world.
That's not what I'm here for.
And he said that he developed a painful, bleeding stomach ulcer from dealing with, quote, all the politics in the martial arts world.
Can't even believe I just had to go and fight a whole campaign. They were voting. The whole city was voting to make katanas illegal.
And I fought them.
That's why I vote no on Prop 36.
So much pressure.
But it would take about a decade for Count Dante to burn all his bridges in the martial arts world. See, in July of 1963, Dante was still close with his American karate sensei, Robert Trias, and the two of them actually put together the first national karate tournament ever held in America. This was a legit event held in Chicago's Hyde Park, and its attendees included Bob Wall, that's the guy who smashed the bottles in Enter the Dragon.
Oh, cool.
Isn't that crazy?
And Bruce Lee himself showed up.
They met? No, I mean, Bruce Lee and Count Dante might have met each other?
Unfortunately, there are no stories, like, specifically of the two of them, like, interacting.
That's but, I mean, Bruce Lee probably thought he was an idiot.
Probably.
And treated him like that, and he was, like, too scared to actually get into a fight he would lose.
Well, well, if I was him, I would just sit there and just go, Bruce Lee's my best friend. Looks like Bruce Lee's my best friend. This is one of the funnest days of my life.
I mean, the American martial arts scene was pretty fucking small at this point.
Yeah. So,
and since Count Dante was like the co-founder of this karate tournament, I'm sure there were interactions between him and Bruce Lee at some point, but...
Most honorable. Hello, sir. He's doing the full bow, you know, and he's just like Bruce Lee, he's with sunglasses on, just going, shut up.
Yeah, get out of here. Yeah.
You're not water.
Yeah. But regardless of whether or not he bothered Bruce Lee that day, Count Dante certainly established himself as a character during this first karate tournament. As a demonstration, Count Dante tried breaking a brick with his bare hand, which is a cliche today, but back in the 60s, pretty fucking incredible. Most people in America hadn't seen anything like that. But Dante broke his hand on the first swing.
Son of a... Brick did hit back.
Okay. Yeah. Brick remained intact.
You all right, a little bit of, that was just a bit of a side quest there. Honestly, my chi.
Undeterred, Dante insisted on trying again. And using that same broken hand, Dante did indeed succeed in breaking the brick.
Broken hand strike! Ah, fuck it! You fucking idiots! That would be me.
Yeah.
I fucking did it! I don't fucking care who you are! Look at me! Look at me!
Cobra, why? Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Now, while Dante never needed to worry about money in his youth, remember, he's still in his early 20s at this point, 24, 25, he still took jobs working as a bouncer in the bars of Chicago's South Side. From what it seems like, though, Dante only took these jobs so he'd have an excuse to get into fights.
Yeah, he did.
Dante would show up to a bouncing gig wearing a beret and a pink shirt, which attracted the attention of various drunken shitheads who just couldn't help themselves.
I like this shirt.
Dante would make a big show of taking out these guys in seconds. He attracted a lot of attention to himself every time, which I'm sure earned him plenty of students who wanted to know how Dante was able to take down anybody instantly.
And what you do is you show up sober and you fight these guys who are extremely drunk in front of everybody, and then you're going to win.
Yeah, you have a black belt in karate and you easily beat a bunch of drunk men. It's actually... That's kind of fun. I can see why he thought this was fun.
Yeah. But he was also incredibly violent.
Yeah.
So he was constantly looking for ways to get that violence out. And of course, that, as we'll get into in the second episode, that ended in some pretty bad shit time and time again, as it often does.
It's kind of funny, though. For a while, he was really trying to find almost job-sanctioned violence. He went to the military. He'd do these other things. He's literally being like... In a way, unlike other serial killers and other people that we've covered, criminals we covered, he is sort of acknowledging his violence.
Yes.
Like, I know that that's ridiculous, but it's like he legitimately is just doing it. And he was trying to be like, well, I don't want to do it illegally.
Yeah.
I want to kill people legally.
Yeah. But as the master of Aikido will tell you, violence begets only more violence.
It sounds like the leader of Aikido is an asshole.
But to be fair, once a student made it to Count Dante's dojo, there would be other instruction besides just fighting techniques, although everything did feed back into aggression. During meditation sessions, Dante would have his students sit in front of a mirror and envision themselves as a tiger or some other wild animal, but mostly tigers.
So first sit, I would like for all of you to first, now feel your weight in the chair. Excellent. deep breaths. Now, you're going to release yourself from the top of your head all the way down to the tips of your toe. Good. Okay. You're a tiger. You go through, you're in the brush. You're in the brush.
Feel like a platypus.
No, you're a tiger. You're a tiger. You're in the brush. You're filled with milk. You're a lady tiger.
Oh.
Yep. Filled with tiger because that's the most aggressive types of tiger.
Hello,
right?
I'm a lady tiger.
First, feed your cubs. Very good. Now, let us go on the hunt. All right, wake up. Everybody wake up. It's time. I lost track of time. All right, it's over. Meditation's over. Hope you're aggressive enough.
Well, Dante would have his students create battle faces with crazy eyes and exaggerated scowls.
That's awesome.
In an attempt to become wild animals themselves.
This Dante, is like theater class.
No, it
yeah.
We all had to be different trees.
Dante claimed that martial arts were invented to protect farmers from wild animals. That is complete and utter bullshit. Yeah. It is like, we don't know exactly how martial arts started, but it wasn't fucking to fight tigers.
Do you have any idea how hard it is to spend your morning sidekicking a raccoon?
Yes, the wildlife of downtown Chicago. But regardless, Dante said that if one needed to defend himself from a wild animal, then a student must become a wild animal himself.
Embrace the lessons of Bakwasan.
Tomorrow's lesson, the zoo.
The next lesson, the petting zoo. See the little stingray.
See how it morphs your hand.
I just beat the shit out of this sea cucumber.
Very good, Mike. Very good. Excellent. Student.
I stomped the llama to death.
Oh, very good.
Did you take it time?
Most honorable.
Live from your grave.
Count Dante was getting a lot of attention around Chicago and in the growing national martial arts scene by the mid-1960s, and that attention was rapidly being converted into a confidence that bred eccentricity and flamboyance. These affectations, however, often became dangerous, because Count Dante was, after all, the world's deadliest man. In 1964, for example, Count Dante bought a lion cub from a zoo in southern Illinois, who I suppose had one too many cubs to take care of that year. Dante named the lion cub Aurelia, claiming that it meant golden one. But really, the lion was a fucking lion.
Yeah, in Illinois.
Yes, and it acted like a lion for the entire time Dante owned her. Just because you get it as a cub doesn't mean it's not going to be a lion.
We understand each other. We have the same hair.
Especially because you know he was just like fighting it all the time.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I mean, oh, yeah, not... he was used.
Yeah. Well, best friend Tommy Gregory remembered that even as a baby, Aurelia the lion could tear anyone to shreds if they weren't careful. Dante actually had to get someone to help him hold down all four of the lion's legs to feed the lion milk from a baby bottle.
God damn it, you're going to take your milk and you're going to like it. All right, just put it in my shirt. Put it in my shirt. Cut it out here, yes.
I am your mother.
But before long, Aurelia was big enough to take on walks. So Count Dante began leading his lion through the streets of Chicago using nothing more than a collar and a leash. He's very much on his way to becoming, to gaining like legendary local character status.
Yeah.
In Chicago.
You have to have a specialized pet.
Yeah. To get to be like a legendary local character.
It always is like, you know, Salvador Dali had the lobster, Anton LaVey, he had his own lion. Yeah. It's like a whole thing.
I remember Tyson moved to Boca when I was a kid and he had a bunch of tigers. And yes. Eventually the HOA was like, so Mr. Tyson?
I just don't think you understand the kind of pressure on the kind of turbulations I experienced.
Can't have pigeons down here. They're too hot.
Too hot
in Florida for pigeons.
Do you want my babies to die? Do you want my babies to die for you? Because if you kill my babies, I'm going to have to kill you. No more. I'm going to eat your uterus.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Tyson. It's been a wonderful meeting.
Well, because this was a fucking lion, Aurelia kept tearing up Count Dante's apartment. Can't leave a lion home alone.
So hard in a studio.
Yeah, so Dante started keeping the lion at his dojo, much to the chagrin of Count Dante's long-suffering landlord.
You should ask my other landlord. You're my second landlord, okay? Just remember that. You're my second landlord. My first landlord's over there, and I've already burnt that bridge. Okay? Mine is here. It's already in here. There's nothing you can do about it.
I burned through all of my favors in the first month with that landlord.
With that landlord.
Well, according to former students, the lion actually became a part of the training. When Aurelia was about a year and a half old, she would wander into the practice area to sweep the feet out from under students using her massive paw. And according to one student, they learned the art of foot sweeps from the lion's surprise attack. Like, imagine that. You're like, not only are you going to this class to get the shit beat out of you every week, but then a fucking lion shows up.
Well, the first class, he gave out guns, right? Yeah. Like, you're at that first class, he gave out guns, you somehow survived. The second class, you're like, okay, well, maybe it's a new lesson group. Yeah. I think it's going to be cool. And then there's a fucking lion in the room, and you're like, I got to stop. I'm going to learn how to play the violin.
Just fucking scratching at your Achilles tendons.
Man, the key is to kick it right in the vagina. That's what my father taught me.
It really can't be said enough. The 60s were fucking insane.
Yeah.
Like, the 60s were, and the 70s were out of hand, out of pocket, for 2 decades.
We were really experimenting with society.
Yeah.
There is a lot of rules that shouldn't have had to been made because of guys like Count Dante.
Yes.
You can't have a tiger in your dojo.
Yeah, it's like another one. You're like, it's super specific, but yeah, it seems it needs to be written down.
Yeah, yeah. Rules that wouldn't make sense 15 years earlier. 15 years earlier, what the dojo? Yeah. But then in the fucking 60s, like, I know what a dojo is. I know what a lion is. Yeah. I know, and I know you can't have a lion in a dojo. Well, after about a year of owning Aurelia the Lion, the static from Count Dante's landlord got to be too much to handle. So Count Dante sold her to a businessman from Quincy, Illinois.
I think she'll do much better mid-state. You know how Illinois is built for lions.
Yeah. But after just a few days of ownership, the businessman called Count Dante at his dojo and told him to come get this goddamn thing because the lion had bit him and he's bleeding all over the goddamn place
and swept the leg.
Yeah, well, phone off.
That's exactly what he did. He just did a little, kind of listen to the guy yell for a little bit.
Yep.
And then just hung it up.
Well, there we go. Let's forget that ever happened.
I'm done with lions.
And now it's time for the ultimate Dante system technique. Forget everything. Never remember.
As soon as something gets too hard, abandon it.
That's rule number one of the Dante system. Rule number one, if it's hard, don't do it. Number two, go for the eyeballs, I think. Number three, watch out for the lion. Number four, here's the gun.
Yeah. Did you try going for its eyes?
Now, karate continued to grow in popularity throughout the 1960s. And while Dante had been the focal point of the Black Dragon Fighting Society during the first American karate tournament, his students got all the attention when they held a second tournament a year later. But Dante's Black Dragons were not getting attention for their skill. Instead, the so-called Dante system had simply made them chaotic and incredibly violent, much to the chagrin of karate master Robert Drias.
It's just him sitting, you know, like with that proud, like arms crossed, like, yes, my students are very strong, aren't they? And they're just like fucking throwing dirt in people's faces, yeah. Like, kicking people on the balls.
You kicked out my fucking teeth! You kicked out my fucking teeth!
Yes, yes, most honorable.
So just bowing at him and just punching him in the balls.
Skip. Lesson number one. Skip the bow. Run right at him. Just attack him. Just attack him. Why is he waiting for you to attack him? Go and attack him there while he's sitting on the chair. Wait for the start thing to start.
You know, they think the belt shows rank, but it's actually to choke people.
Yeah. See, everybody else who entered this tournament was under the assumption this is a no contact tournament.
Yeah.
Like, we're not going to be, like, it's, you know, I think it's sort of like touches.
Yeah. It's, you know, like you score. By, like, by getting through the person's defenses.
Not so with Count Dante's guys. They win it. All they knew how to do was beat the shit out of somebody. They didn't know. They had never done any of the no contact shit. So Count Dante and his students were using techniques. Their fucking teeth are flying across mats that are covered in blood.
I'm just looking at pure success. Yeah. All of this means the Dante system is working.
So did they win, or were they, like, disqualified?
It just sort of devolved into chaos. The whole thing erupted into this huge fight between a group of black Muslims and a group of Marines. They just got into a fucking brawl, and the brawl got big. It's like a fucking bar fight scene out of a movie. It spilled out into the street. There's a bunch of guys fucking punching each other.
I gotta say, I know a lot of people are disappointed, but this is how I've always hoped every karate tournament would end.
I mean, what's more American than stealing something and ruining it with violence?
Yeah. Just like a violent practice and making it more violent. Yeah. Like, martial arts is still violent.
Yeah.
It's just peaceful and all this shit. I just love it. He's like, that's a praying. That's for mantises.
Now, this wasn't what karate was supposed to be about. And there were indeed other martial arts instructors in Chicago who saw how dangerous Count Dante's methods actually were. A Vietnam vet and martial arts instructor named Gregory Jacko, who was, interestingly, also the father of Rapé Lupe Fiasco.
Very cool.
He was quoted as saying that sooner or later, someone was going to die because of Count Dante's craziness. And he was 100% right. Now, as it went, Count Dante was continuing to be flippant about matters of life and death. In an interview with CBS, Dante was asked if someone could be seriously injured doing karate. Dante escalated the question immediately, saying that you could very easily kill someone using karate if you knew how and where to hit them. But because
I'll give you one better.
Yeah.
I'll kill you right now.
Yeah. My karate involves this brick in your face.
Yeah. Oh, very effective.
Tell me, who is your least favorite, the cameraman or the sound guy?
I would gladly eliminate him.
But because of statements like this, and because of his students' behavior at the 1964 National Karate Tournament, Count Dante was expelled from Robert Trias's U.S. Karate Alliance in a split that was, to say the least, acrimonious. See, Dante told Black Belt magazine that the split came because he was promoting his black students to the black belt rank, which Dante claimed was, quote, tacitly forbidden by Robert Trias's USKA. Just basically said, I left because Robert is a racist. But according to Robert Trias, he was just getting annoyed by Count Dante's continual and escalating lies about his own past. Lies that Dante was beginning to extend to Trias himself without Trias's consent. Without Trias's permission, Dante had printed a brochure promoting that 1964 karate tournament, which claimed that Trias had once fought a bear.
They're gonna love this.
They're gonna love this.
Trias had never fought a bear. He'd never claimed that he had fought a bear.
Hey, you fought that really hairy guy last week. That's why I put it down. I saw him. He may as well have been a bear. If he didn't want to look like a bear, he should have shaved. All right, you fought the bear, and I believe in you, Sensei.
Well, Trias also greatly disagreed with Count Dante's belief that fighters needed to actually hurt each other during training. But the last straw, of course, was the fact that Count Dante's students had turned Trias's 1964 no-contact tournament into a blood-covered brawl.
You people just don't get me. That's what this is. It's just different vibes.
Now, regardless of the real reason behind Count Dante's removal from the USKA, he immediately countered by forming his own karate organization called the World Karate Federation. Several of Dante's students joined, but it was particularly the students who enjoyed the full-contact sparring, i.e. beating the shit out of each other on a regular basis, who followed Dante most fervently into this new karate world.
We will take over the greater Chicagoland area one deep dish restaurant at a time. What's that? What's that? What's that? And they're all just like, yeah, yeah!
Before we are over, every hot dog in America will have ketchup on it.
Yeah, yeah!
But Count Dante, to be totally fair, he continually put his money where his mouth was when it came to racial integration. He trained black students who had been refused training everywhere else in town. And students did see Dante arguing with his landlord because the landlord was threatening to kick Dante out for training black students. And also the lion.
But yeah, it's the black students he's really going on about.
Yeah,
that was what he said. He said the first thing about the black students. Yes, he did say something additional about the giant jungle cat.
So he was using racism to commit many crimes.
Possibly.
Well,
yeah.
He also genuinely believed. I actually see here, we see here is a genuine, like, dumb man's version of being open. In his mind, he really does. I really believe in his heart of hearts, he was giving these guys, he thought and believed, he was giving people skills that they would need. And he genuinely believed that the world of martial arts was kind of racist, because it kind of was, right?
Yeah.
It literally was. But I think that he also viewed it as a sales technique. I think it was, yeah, more often than not, you're going to come to me too, because I'm telling you, other people that reject you, I'm going to take you.
Yeah, I think he was just preying on people who had nowhere else to turn to.
You know, to push back on that, one of his black students has been trying for years to make a documentary about him, focusing solely on, like, the racial integration work that he did.
There's a lot of people, like, that are right about one thing accidentally.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people. You know, Jim Jones.
Yeah,
Jim Jones integrated. Yeah, and Jim Jones integrated, like, Indiana. Like, he did all of these.
Indianapolis. Yeah.
Yes.
No, he was responsible. Jim Jones was seriously responsible for integrating Indiana or Indianapolis.
Black people did he kill in the end?
Quite a few. Hundreds. Hundreds upon hundreds. Majority out of the 900 some odd who died, most of them were black. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So,
because they trusted him.
Cancel each other out, could say,
yeah,
in the end.
It's one of those things. You're just right. You are, in this one instance,
a master
right.
manipulator in my mind, but that's fine.
Sure. But social justice aside, Count Dante's continual focus on violence eventually turned into full attempted mayhem by the summer of 1965, when Dante and a student tried blowing up the windows of a rival dojo unassumingly called the Chicago Judo and Karate Center.
It's not strong enough a name.
There's not even a dragon in the name.
How would you know that it's Asian? As Asian as I.
No dragons, no tigers, no cobras.
There's
this place
no Asian.
Must go.
Where's the Asian? So, I don't even see a place here for General Tso.
So one night, Dante and this student, who's just some fucking guy named Doug, they taped a detonating cap and a length of wire to the rival karate center's front door with the intent of blowing out the windows because the rival dojo owed Count Dante money.
Doug, you
Oh, my number one. We're going, Doug, deep into the war tonight. You and me, Doug. We're going out there and we're going to bring these race traitors to the ground. And only I can trust you, Doug.
Now, Count Dante claimed that they couldn't light the fuse because he and Doug were simply just too drunk.
Yeah.
They'd gotten real wasted before going out and trying to blow up these windows.
That's the Chicago in them.
Yes. It was accidental. There was a White Sox game.
Well, Count Dante later told the Chicago Tribune that they tried 3 or 4 times to light the explosive, but the fuse kept falling off, and they only gave up because the cops spotted them.
Let's split, guys.
Yeah.
Like, they're out there just like,
run! Hey,
they're trying to get it. Light a few strikes. Light a few strikes. Oh, fucking not. I mean, Doug, I trusted you.
Yes.
Doug, I thought you could pull this. Doug, you were supposed to be the DD for the explosions.
I own this place. I just forgot my keys.
Oh, whoa, Doug. You're fucking Doug. You're a traitor. I love you.
Yeah, I honestly thought that I could light a fuse just by snapping real hard.
Yeah,
but I can't.
Light a few strikes.
But Dante and Doug, they weren't so drunk that they couldn't get into a high-speed car chase running from the cops, which, of course, resulted in their eventual arrest. This, of course, was only after Doug had thrown 13 blasting caps out of the car window during the pursuit.
Let's just say, officers, can we please just do this whole thing with the mulligan?
Is this like the one time the Chicago cops didn't kill somebody?
Yeah, yeah. Now, the cops gave chase because they were actually on the lookout for bombers, because there had been a series of similar intimidation bombings happening in that same area of Chicago in the mid-1960s. That's probably why they weren't trying to kill them, because they were trying to figure out if they were responsible for all these other crimes. The FBI talked to Count Dante to see if he had anything to do with these other bombings. And according to the FBI report, Dante told the FBI that he and Doug had some blasting caps in their possession. Yes, but they were going to throw them into Lake Michigan, if only to avoid the exact scenario in which they now found themselves.
I somehow found myself with all of these blasting caps, yes. And the blasting caps themselves told me to use them. And I feel, and because of the sacred teachings of Bagua Zhang, I know that most inanimate objects do have a soul and a yearning for activity. And so we thought we would excite the blasting caps. Please don't arrest me. I cannot go to jail with other black people. I cannot go in there. I will kill.
Because he was excessively intoxicated that night, he and Doug decided at the last minute to, quote, blow off some steam by shattering the windows of their rival dojo instead of throwing the blasting caps into Lake Michigan.
Oh, so this is after they were arrested, they went back and broke the windows?
No. He told me. I know it's very confusing. It's so stupid. He told the FBI, he's like, no, I had some blasting caps, but see, there was all these bombings going on, so we thought, throw them in Lake Michigan. No kids are going to find them there, so we're going to throw them in Lake Michigan. But then, you know, we had a few beers, and
then we started thinking,
fuck it, let's go blow up the dojo windows.
It's kind of funny to do, you know.
Yeah. And then I said, Doug, this is all Doug's idea, by the way. But I said, Doug, that's the most amazing thing we could possibly do, and we will fight those race traitors most honorably. Damn, Doug, where's that little girl Patty you like? like to see her around, like a little boy.
Now, while the FBI did let Dante and Doug go, they did note in their report, in all caps, mind you, that Count Dante should be considered dangerous because he was, quote, reportedly subject to a violent and antisocial behavior pattern and has suicidal tendencies.
Do you mind if I take this slip of paper and hang on it up in my dojo? This is actually excellent advertising.
For the violent and antisocial behavior pattern is perfect for the Dante system.
It's actually one of the main tenets of the Dante system.
I would kill myself, but unfortunately I am too strong to do so.
It is when the immovable object meets the unstoppable force.
Now, after Count Dante got the law off his back, he supposedly studied with a Chinese master named James Lee, who allegedly taught the Count the fabled Touch of Death, a a technique known as Demak, which, according to some, is what really killed Bruce Lee.
And I think that's true. I think it's true.
They said that no, he did not die from a bad reaction to a medication. Instead, he was touched with the touch of death, with the Demak, and his heart exploded.
Is it like one of those like five fingers touches where you go, is it?
Yeah, the end of Kill Bill.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, that's the
Demak. Did I just kill you?
Not maybe yet. We'll see.
Well, no, he's gonna get up and take 10 steps.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. because Bruce Lee supposedly died from a delayed reaction to a Demak.
It doesn't make any sense, though.
It does not.
But, well.
While the concept of Demak does have roots in the legit practice of acupuncture, there's no evidence that the touch of death actually exists.
Why would the acupuncture have a touch of death? Like, literally. Like, but, it's like I never understood why do ships in sci-fi movies have a self-detonate fucking thing? They shouldn't. That doesn't make sense.
Hey, sometimes they need to have the self-destruct button because if a villain takes over the ship, he cannot be allowed to have such a powerful ship such as, say, the USS Enterprise. There must be a self-destruct made so he does not have access to all of the weapon systems on said ship.
So Captain Kirk taught you about suicide?
Yeah, he keeps coming to him in the night. The guy keeps coming and going, Marcus, I have got to tell you, do it.
Well, my favorite captain is Captain Sisko, if I will have you know.
Yeah, thong Captain Sisko.
Yeah, it's the thong song guy. Yeah, that's my favorite Star. Fuck off.
I thought Captain Sisko was one of those that brought all the fucking calamari to Applebee's.
Oh. Benjamin Sisko! He was the captain of Deep Space Nine.
Touch of death.
But around the time that Count Dante supposedly learned the touch of death, the one touch that can make a man's heart stop by hitting him in just the right spot, in just the right way.
Yeah, you flick him on the balls.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
That was in 1967. After that, Count Dante fully embraced his local character image in every way possible. This, in 1967, is when Count Dante becomes Count Dante. The former Jan Kian legally changed his name to Count Juan Rafael Dante, which he claimed was his rightful title by as a descendant of Spanish royalty.
Yes, I'm a part of the conquistadors.
You can tell by my red roots.
Yes. My bright, bright crimson pubic hair.
It's the freckles that get me away, right? Yeah.
Super Spanish, right? God, I love pulpo.
I curse my Irish heritage. I curse it.
Dante also permed his jet black dyed hair into a massive afro in a Chicago beauty salon that he owned himself.
Yeah, he's a true entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm. And he started sculpting his facial hair into elaborate sharp devil points and curves using a hair dissolving powder. Finally, Count Dante donned a Dracula style cape and wandered Chicago with a walking stick embossed with 24 karat gold, all while wearing dancer's leotards.
Can you see my balls?
Basically, Count Dante saw what Satanist Anton LaVey was doing in San Francisco around the same time and said, I'm just going to do that, but with karate.
He literally just stole his whole fucking shtick.
Yeah, he stole
the
his
lion,
whole
lion, everything.
Oh, yeah, he stole the whole fucking shtick. But it's just funny because it's like, it was mostly just because, like, it's good for advertising.
Yeah. I mean, well, technically, Count Dante got the lion before Anton LaVey got his lion.
He did.
Oh, okay. Who copied who?
Yeah, who copied who? But yeah, he saw, but it was mostly the aesthetic. Like, because it's just, you know, Anton LaVey looked evil. He looked like a comic book villain. And it was also the attitude, the sort of like, not really anti-hero thing, but the idea of being a real life heel, a villain.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's an act of showmanship. Like, he saw how much attention Anton LaVey was getting. It's like, oh, I can do that same thing. I'll just add martial arts to it, and I can be that guy. I can be a comic book villain.
Because he is.
Yeah, and it's also like the shift to the Count Dante persona. It's basically, I mean, it is just Dante's insatiable need for attention writ large.
Yeah.
In keeping with his imitation of Anton LaVey, Count Dante also purchased several occult and adult bookstores around Chicago, which he added to the dojo, the beauty parlor, and the jewelry store that he already owned.
Man, wow. He bought a lot of shit with his dad's pussy money.
Yeah, he had a gift shop, too. I think it's around this time, though, that his dad is like, I'm not giving you any more money.
Yeah. Because Daddy, you don't understand my mission. Daddy, I wish you could understand how powerfully Asian I really am while being Spanish.
I'm going to keep calling you John.
My name is Count Dante. But Count it, what?
Interestingly, though, Count Dante also opened a mail order business that sold hardware and other home items. According to Tommy Gregory, Dante was Amazon before Amazon. And Dante actually made a lot of money with just this mail order business. But ever the eccentric, Count Dante's workforce for his mail order business was made up of nuns recruited from a local church.
It's just so fucking good.
Yeah.
It's so fucking good.
Because nuns were the only people that Dante would trust to handle money for him.
Yeah, because they don't fucking get, they don't get paid.
Yeah, you don't have to pay them. Yeah, that's the other thing.
It's so fucking good.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's helping the children, so I suppose he can help.
Yes. I love you, Sister Mary Frances. But I am married to martial arts. Oh, you are celibate? Well, change all that.
Put strike.
Now, the nuns weren't just shipping hardware for Dante's Amazon before Amazon. By 1968, Count Dante had discovered the power of merch.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. So he began selling t-shirts, sweatpants, warm-up jackets, and even nunchucks through the mail, all of it promoting the Black Dragon Fighting Society.
That's awesome!
Most famously, Count Dante also sold 3 mail order pamphlets, also shipped out by his nuns under the title World's Deadliest Fighting Secrets.
It's just the nuns fucking just shipping this World's Deadliest Fighting Secrets out.
Just coming in like, whatever helps. Yes, oh, John is certainly God's child, isn't he?
Yeah. Okay,
so funny.
Dante advertised these pamphlets in comic books like Batman, Spider-Man, Howard the Duck was a really big one for him.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, well, because
there's a lot of crossover.
There's a lot of the type of kid who read Howard the Duck in the late 60s is gonna love Count Dante.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Really gonna love him. And also, the advertising space in Howard the Duck was far cheaper than Batman and Spider-Man.
No way,
Howard the Duck.
It's a classic, but yeah, it's cheaper. But these ads, of course, were keeping in tradition with other strongmen who preyed on bullied comic book nerds. Most famous, of course, was Charles Atlas, whose Hero of the Beach muscle building ads were a reliable source of ad revenue for both Marvel and DC for many years. You guys know those old Charles Atlas ads,
oh, yes.
Right?
I don't think I do.
It's it shows like a series of panels where, you know, a bully comes and kicks dirt on a guy who's out on a date with a girl, and the girl says, "He's the nuisance of the beach." And so the guy orders Charles Atlas's muscle building booklet. He becomes super muscly and he beats up the bully and he becomes the hero of the beach.
Ah,
it's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Grant Morrison turned the whole thing into a great character named Flex Mentallo. Very cool. Now, and Count Dante's absolutely incredible red and black full page ads. They're just pop art masterpieces. And they featured Count Dante himself. Dante looks like fucking Dracula with an afro.
It's so funny.
And not Blackula. He's white Dracula.
Oh, he
with
is
an
white
afro.
Dracula.
Yeah, yeah, he's got a cape. I do remember.
You know
yeah.
what? I'd go as call him white Blackula. He is absolutely, yeah. He's just such a funny fucking looking guy.
Never thought of that concept. White Blackula. That's
him.
Well, in these ads, Dante would make incredible promises. He claimed that if you ordered his pamphlets that cost only 25 cents, one could learn the fabled Touch of Death. One ad said, quote,
"An expert at Dim Mak could easily kill many judo, karate, kung fu, aikido, and gung fu experts at one time with only one fingertip pressure using his murderous poison hand weapons."
Poison hand weapons, all caps, by the way.
Poison hand weapons.
One touch. And when you ask, like, how was he able to advertise this? It's because it didn't work.
Yeah, it was fake.
It was stupid. Like, it was all dumb. No one took it seriously because they didn't have to because it was fake. But that was the mail order shit. What Count Dante was doing in Chicago, training all those kids in the most violent ways possible, that was about to result in the incredibly violent death of one man. That, of course, came as a result of the so-called Dojo War. And the Dojo War is how we will return next week for the conclusion to our series, in addition to Count Dante's career as a coke dealer and possible bank robber.
Oh, finally, some real businesses.
Oh, yeah. This guy, you know, what a ridiculous character. And I'm very excited to come back next week for some violence. Once you hear about this Dojo War, oh my God, it's just so, it's just as funny as everything else.
It's so stupid.
It's so fucking stupid.
Yeah, it's all so ridiculous. It's just life is not a kung fu movie. It never works out like that.
And it's almost a shame in that way.
It really is.
Because he really tried to live it.
Yeah, because in kung fu movies, you don't have a guy go like, you punched me too hard in the stomach. You punched me too hard in the stomach.
Ow, ow, ow. You hurt my finger. Ow. Ow. You hurt my goddamn ow. No, that hurts.
Everyone just sounds like the fucking the grape lady in that old video. Yeah. That's what most fights sound like.
Well, what do you think the entire Ming Dynasty sounded like? And go to patreon.com/lastpodcastontheleft to give us money to listen to our show ad-free. You can also see Last Stream on the Left live every Tuesday, 5 p.m. PST.
Yeah, and watch us on Netflix.
Yeah! Watch our video on Netflix. We're good on there. And then we got new YouTube channels. Go check it out. HGX2 is on LPN TV, our second season of Hoopa Goo Goo, the game show. It is on LPN TV. Go fucking check
it
out.
That's right. We got the third episode comes out today. So make sure you go and check it out. Fucking binge it. It's probably one of my favorite things I've ever worked on. It's so much fun.
It's very cool.
Everyone's in it. Everyone in the theater. Marcus is going to show up. We got Henry all over it. It's fucking amazing.
It's really fucking great. And go to all our other YouTube channels. Go to @LP on the left for all of your social media needs. And go to lastpodcastontheleft.com to buy tickets to see us live.
Oh, and thanks to everyone who made us the fifth most streamed podcast of all time on Spotify.
Yeah!
Yeah, those rankings just came out today after 20 years of Spotify.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, we were number five. So thank you, everyone who made that happen.
Friggin' wild.
We continue to do it.
That's right.
We continue, and we will not stop until the fucking sun explodes.
We got shows coming up. May 29th, Pittsburgh. July 27th, Grand Rapids, Michigan. July 17th, Tulsa, Oklahoma. And July 18th, Oklahoma City. I got a bunch of shows. Check it out on eddietunes.com to find out where you can see me live. And also, with our new YouTube channels, The Brighter Side. Follow and subscribe to The Brighter Side LPN on YouTube. That's youtube.com/@TheBrighterSideLPN. And subscribe because you can now watch us.
It's so fucking cool. Go
moving
watch
up.
Us. We're moving on. Up or getting all the video going. We're working hard here over at the fucking Laugh Factory. We want you to see our new stuff. Please go check us out on YouTube. Go look at all of us because we've been working very hard and we have Bloodbath 77, our second series of our VTM playthrough that is going to be coming out also very soon. So take it. We're shooting it momentarily.
Indeed.
All right, fuckers. Hail, sweet Satan.
Yeah, Gene.
Hail, the LA Natural History Museum for showing me the orca exhibit.
It's really nice.
It's really nice. I had a really great time. They invited me for their grand opening. I felt like an actual celebrity.
Oh, yeah. That's great. That's fantastic.
Great.
So go learn about orcas, you fucking idiots.
Yeah, you fucking pieces of shit.
You think they'll like that?
Yeah, there you go. No, actually, they'll probably put it as a poll quote.
Yeah.
And they start advertising the orca. Go see it, you fucking idiots. Ed Larson, last podcast in the last.
Ed Podcast Strike!